All right, call the resource committee to order, March 16th, for four representative Barnes, Bass, Stefani, and Seckler for president.
Ben will be here shortly.
Well, let's take up the permanent fund today, and,
what's the deal?
I was just kidding.
Which one do you guys want to do?
78. 78. I'm gonna adopt the amendment from 78. Try to share with you, 79.
Yeah, I don't know what meeting we do. We'll take up HDR 78 first.
I think it was the 10-year-old.
What else do you think you wanted to do? We're gonna take some tests, I guess we're gonna be in like the dining room, the first one. Yeah, that one would be, yeah.
Okay.
I don't know, I mean, what's, we can adopt these amendments. Okay.
Okay, so we're sending your action.
We gotta rescind our action, and I don't know what that is. Take the motion. I move we rescind our action in adopting and passing out HDR 78 and bring it back before the committee. And asking them to consent.
Is there any objection? Hearing then, HDR 78 is before us, again. It was, after the bill was passed out quickly in order that we would still have a quorum when it would be passed out, we passed out a little ahead of its time. There was a series of amendments that were suggested by Ed Hine, legislative counsel. And most of them are clean up, so at this time I would take suggestions to amend according to...
Mr. Chairman, I have a question to ask relative to the amendments, which I think all members have on the memo that you're talking about by Ed Hine. It's my understanding that the amendments are in fact not substantive, and that they primarily clarify language and correct grammatical mistakes and so forth. That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, I've shown the amendments to a number of people that are interested in the bill and the sponsor as well, and there's this unanimous feeling that all the proposed amendments by Hine are cleanup and non-substantive.
That being the case, Mr. Chairman, I would move that we accept the amendments to HDR 78 as outlined in the March 3rd memo from Ed Hine, and ask unanimous consent.
Okay, the motion before us is to adopt those non-substantive amendments as proposed by Ed Hine, legislative counsel, a memorandum dated March 3rd, 1982, into HDR 78, and unanimous consent was asked. Any objections? Hearing no objections, those amendments are adopted into HDR 78. For the record, Representative Carney has joined us.
Mr. Chairman, there are additional amendments to HDR 78, as I understand, that have been suggested by various individuals. One would involve adding the word domestic in the last further resolve. Somehow I managed to get it on page again, so I can't tell the line. Is it, can you just ask me a number of page, please?
The tenth line.
In the tenth line on page 3, I move we add the word domestic prior to fisheries. So it would read exclusive jurisdiction over domestic fisheries management and limited fisheries conservation. I'm asking that.
Okay, motion then is to include foreign on line 10 and proceed fisheries so the resolve would read that the Alaska State Legislature respectfully requests the United States Congress to grant the state of Alaska exclusive jurisdiction over domestic fisheries management within the fisheries conservation zone along Alaska's coast established by the Fisheries Conservation and Management Act of 1976. Are there any objections? Hearing none, that amendment is adopted.
Additionally, Mr. Speaker, and Mr. Chairman, I guess you could, on page 2, there's a suggestion that we added two additional whereas clauses. One says, whereas the high seas gill net operation for squid by foreign fleets are intercepting significant numbers of North American salmon, and whereas the dollar value of incidentally destroyed halibut by foreign trawlers exceeds the value of the boats and other marketable catch. And that should be inserted after line 10 on page 2. I would move that amendment and ask unanimous consent.
Okay. So, on page 2, line 11, there would be a new whereas. Whereas high-speed fuel net operations are squid by foreign fleets are intercepting significant numbers of North American salmon.
And
are there any objections to that amendment? Okay. I'd just like to ask Roger, incidentally destroyed is a term that's commonly used when speaking of fish that are thrown away. I object for the purpose of, Roger, have you seen the whereas the dollar value of incidentally destroyed halibut by foreign trawlers exceeds the value of the total permitted marketable catch?
Yes, I have. I really don't understand that particular amendment. I think it's probably accurate if you take the dollar amount of the incidentally caught halibut is probably equal to the amount of halibut that U.S. fishermen catch, but I don't think that particular phrase says
question, Roger, is about the word, the two words, incidentally destroyed, and I think we wonder whether or not incidentally caught or some other phraseology would be better there. If the word incidentally destroyed are offensive to your organization.
Incidentally destroyed, I don't think is very descriptive of what goes on. What happens when halibut are caught in a trawl and brought up aboard is that in most cases they'll die. The trawlers can't keep them, they're forbidden species and they have to be thrown overboard. We don't know what the mortality rate is, but we suspect that is 90% of rate.
Would the word caught be better there? And I would ask another question relative to another point you made up. If we inserted the word likely between trawlers and exceeds, would that solve that problem? It would read, whereas the dollar value of incidentally caught halibut by foreign trawlers likely exceeds the value of their total permitted marketable catch.
Yes, I believe so. I'd also like to suggest, though, that you may want to define a little bit more directly what you mean by their marketable value. That sounds real vague to me. It doesn't say the value of the caliber caught by American fishermen. think that's what that phrase implies.
That says it suits the value of their total permitted marketable catch.
The foreigners aren't allowed to market any halibut they catch in our waters. Only American fishermen are at this point.
It would almost be like, instead of they are legally,
say the total permitted marketable catch. Keep the value, likely keep the value of those permitted. Karen ran up here and did a presentation to somebody who did him that proposed it perhaps in the way.
Yeah, Dick, so just on your suggested amendment, where is dollar value incidentally destroyed halibut? Was the question of is incidentally destroyed terminology that is normally used in describing what you want to do, and is the whereas technically correct? I mean, does it say what you want to say? We all know what you're trying to say, but we're just wondering if this says it.
The only question I think I would have is I can absolutely say that is in fact the case. Wood more than what the project they call it. They might have to state that.
Representative Randolph, but currently the language says, whereas the dollar value of incidentally destroyed halibut by foreign trawlers exceeds the value of their total permitted marketable catch, would it do damage, in your opinion, to your suggested amendment if we were to replace the word destroyed with cost, insert the word likely between trawlers and exceed, replace the word there with thus, so it would then read, whereas the dollar value of incidentally caught halibut by foreign trawlers likely exceeds the value of the total permitted marketable catch.
Is that, Roger, in your opinion, I mean, obviously it makes me more comfortable with it. Is that?
I think that is good. I misunderstood the intent of it, obviously. I thought they were talking about the total marketable value of the halibut caught by U.S.
I can explain, I think, where the difference is. My name is Rick Lava, for the record. The problem with the trawlers, foreign trawlers, is they catch relatively small halibut. My recollection is the halibut are about a kilo in size. And of course, that size halibut is an illegal halibut for a halibut fisherman, Canadian or American fisherman. So if these halibut were allowed to grow through their normal life range until they became legal halibut, even with the natural mortality rate, the estimate is that the foreign trawl catch far exceeds what is taken by American fishermen. Now, whether or not in their infant size or not, that's the case, right now I can't tell you, but I can certainly tell you that if there were no foreign trawling and the halibut would be allowed to grow to their natural size, it would certainly be a true story. But I think your amendment just clarifies it a little bit more.
There's a likely in there we can get away with everything.
Yeah.
Okay, so I remove my objection. If you'd like to once again amend. Your amendment of
the I'd like to restate, Mr. Chairman, the amendment would read, include two whereas clauses, two new whereas clauses on page 2 after line 10, which would read, whereas the high seas gill net operations pursued by foreign police are intercepting significant numbers of North American salmon, whereas the dollar value of incidentally caught halibut by foreign trawlers likely exceeds the value of the total permitted marketable catch, and I would ask you to continue.
Is there any objection to that amendment? Hearing none, those two whereas are adopted.
Mr. Chairman, if there's no further amendments or further testimony.
Well, I hope that this will clean the bill up so that we don't have to bring it back and forth again. I apologize for the first time. So I would entertain a motion to remove HDR 78.
Second.
committee substitute chair for the refer.
Some rules, Mr. Chairman, ask amendment. Yes? And with amendment?
With amendment, amended. Are there any objections? Are there no objections? Committee substitute for House Joint Resolution 78, refers amended, has moved out of committee. John, did you pick up the amendments to the second set of whereas?
Yeah, they're here.
Yeah. Okay. We'd like to move the legislation that we had the extensive public hearings on last week relative to the Sage West Rebellion. And we'd entertain a motion, it's my understanding, that the sponsors and interested parties of the legislation, if there are no further amendments pending, there are no amendments pending before the committee relative to House Bill Number 8, which is an act of running command and control of the land, state of Alaska, and extra for Alaska resources is the judiciary. And of course, we have the, as you mentioned, the statewide teleconference, and also had the Dean Rhodes on from that. And we'd like to bring up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just noticing with some interest, not everywhere but quick, Mr. Rhodes' testimony about health conference to this committee, and that he felt at this time this legislation should be passed. But I spoke to him on the phone about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and I'm just wanting to note it for the record. At the time, I and one of my aides talked to him on the phone. But he indicated to me that this would be a useless exercise of utility. Although I have always introduced and supported this type of legislation, that he thought that the only way to go, the time I talked to him again 3 to 4 weeks ago, was that a support of the privatization issue and that passing legislation would not do any good. However, I see his testimony before this committee when I was out for my Thursday general in Anchorage is contradictory to what he told me on the phone, and I would like it noted for the record.
He will take note that he has explained to us that he in relative to hinging the state of civilian legislation on federal legislation, which 667 does, that he had indeed spoke against that and did also in testimony to us speak against that, since he did, and in the testimony you can see very clearly, feels that the federal legislation has many problems and will not go through. So he is indeed was opposed and is opposed to the contending our legislation on the passage of the federal legislation. But he did, of course, specifically urge, as you can see, us to go back to
Standing, I would just respond that when I spoke to him on the phone, I had both pieces of legislation before me, and the discussion was taking place on both pieces of legislation at that time. And at that time, he indicated to me that there was no need to pass either bill. I did not go to him with one specific bill, but with the contents of both the discussion with him. And my aide had talked with his staff extensively on the two pieces of legislation before I spoke to him directly. And I just noted that I believe that there is conflict in what he told me over the phone and what he said.
Obviously, he felt the word on the phone and also complained. It was just great. And then very well done, I think. Unless there's other things, I move that we move House Bill 8, an individual recommendation. Is there objection?
objection.
There has been objection, Representative Hunt, that is a motion report to move the bill within the recommendations out of the committee. Let's represent that to give comments to the recommendation. So the committee will vote on, since there has been recommendation, the vote is on whether or not to move our facility out of committee with individual recommendations. President Fine, how do you vote?
Yes.
President Jackson?
No.
President Moffitt?
Yes.
President Tucker?
Yes.
President Fine, vote yes. Our facility has moved out of committee to its next committee referral with the judiciary.
What's the word on the Thorn Bay? Are they still working on that?
I guess it's going to be here at 4 o'clock.
Next bill we'll bring up is Council 528, which is the Title 16 revision. And I think everybody. Amendment is to delete section 7.
Not me.
Really?
Why would we do it?
Oh, I see. Oh, Mr. Chairman.
I'll move the motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move to delete section 7 from the bill.
Representative Vasquez has moved to delete the section 7. It begins on line 28, page 2. Line 5 on page 3. There is objection. Representative Vasquez, how do you vote?
Yes.
Representative Barnes?
Yes.
No.
The section is deleted. I'm just taking space in.
The next proposed amendment.
Oh, it stays in there.
It's deleted. Section 7 is deleted. You went 3-1.
Sorry.
Next amendment is page 3, line 13, delete section 8.
Mr. Chairman, I move to delete section 8.
Is there objection?
Just got my copy of you to see what part of the deletion you're on.
Good.
Mr. Chairman, I move to delete on page 3, line 14, section B.
Okay, wait a minute. There's a motion to delete section 8. Section 8, which begins on line 13 on page 3. There's a motion to that section. Is there objection? Without objection, section 8, which begins on line 13 of page 3 and runs through line 3 of page 4, has been deleted. The next proposed amendment is on page 5.
Section 8, the rule probably be asked to say why,
The reason we decided is the Deputy Commissioner Demmer at the very outset of these discussions relative to his position for the Department of Fish and Game was that the bill makes some important changes and that they would like to see the bill pass, and if there was anything that was remotely controversial, it was their recommendation suggesting that we delete it in order to get the bill itself out. And there was some controversy relative to Section 8 from page 5, line 16. There are two proposals, either to delete section 17 in its entirety, or the alternative is to set print on your sheet there.
Which is the preferable one?
Let's take a moment and read on that sheet. This was the amendment that, I think I would recommend the alternative there.
That's directed by the Commissioner of Revenue as soon as possible.
As soon as possible, that's the last day of each calendar month and quarter. Yeah. Or to delete the whole thing out of the
page 5, line 22, delete as directed by the Commissioner of Revenue in place and replace it as soon as practicable after the last day of each calendar month.
Representative Barnes has moved that on line 22, page 5, we delete as directed by Commissioner Revenue and replace that with as soon as practicable after last day of each calendar month and quarter as directed by the Commissioner of Revenue. Is there objection? Hearing none, that amendment passes. The next proposed amendment is on page 6, line 19.
Mr. Chairman, on page 6, line 19, the reconstruction replaced with the change to construct.
It has been moved by Representative Barnes to delete who constructs on page 6, line 19, and replace that language with which intends to construct.
Which intends?
Which intends. So it would read, a person or government agency which intends to construct a hydraulic project. Is there objection? Without objection, that amendment is passed.
Continuing on with that motion, on line 25th, after activity in first, set out in this subsection.
Representative Barnes has moved that on line 26, page 6, we add the word set out in this subsection after the word activity on line 26. Is there objection? Hearing none, that amendment is passed. The next amendment is suggested on page 13, line 13. Mistaken, this relates to the size of the same vessel and also to the job.
Right.
Page 13, line 13, delete. Section 16.05.835, line 14, delete. Section 16.10.1.2.
Representative Barnes has moved that on line 13, page 13, we delete from that repeater clause 1605.835, and on line 14, 1610.120. Is there objection?
I don't think we put that in the grand stand. The limitations?
Right, they wanted them to be repealed, and we decided not to do it.
I have to.
There is objection. Is there a discussion? Is it separate?
I can agree. But it basically, they wanted to do it in this bill. We've got the 58-foot limit before us in committee, and we're going to be taking that up. So we're addressing that on its own. The drum thing is a controversial issue that conceivably will cause harm to whether or not the bill goes. But it would repeal the it's now illegal to use a motorized drum. And they want to repeal it. We thought that was controversial enough to exclude it from here.
Mr. Speaker, I think it is controversial enough to exclude it from the bill.
You don't know your business.
Yes, yeah, and I am objecting to removing it from the file.
No.
No, you're right. Okay, I remove my objection.
Okay, I agree with that. Objection having been removed. Section 1605.835 and 1610.120 are removed from the repealers. Before we accept the motion to move the bill, I would like to just allow at least a minute for committee members to quickly glance through the bill themselves and see if there are any other areas that they think should be amended or deleted that we have not
Mr. Chairman, I can't find my notes.
Mm-hmm.
I think that.
Well, I think that this question was Let me ask John, I don't have my original bill, but I have marked up either. You were
satisfied with the third view and think that would be,
I think I was satisfied that the existing law is messed up and it's still messed up, so.
Yeah, I wanted to listen.
What happened here? We decided on page 6 from section 19, right there. Any family intended for sale, there's some proposed changes there on line from 9 to 14, I believe they're fishing a week. So, we did a period there. That's when I started talking about hearing that we all know that we were here. Okay. I think.
I don't remember.
Somebody wanted to delete the part or that has been sold to in line 12 so that there's the next section of the way to say that you guys are going to go to the part of the city that's in the intended for sale.
I don't understand the first sentence. Disregard for the consequences?
We're just kind of looking on page 6 at one time. There's been a discussion around 60 lines, 9, 10, 11, 12, and
Chairman, I move that the resources committee move the resources committee to perhaps go on the back twenty.
Motion is to place this in the form of a resource committee substitute and to move that substitute from the committee as amended. We'll have you in it, the amendment will be in effect. Is there objection? Hearing none, resource committee substitute House Bill 528, that amendment.
I think we get the report of the individual up here about
We have before us House Bill 811, an act related to preferences to occupants of land under the United States Forest Service timber contract. House Resources did some preliminary work on this bill, and consequently some supposed defects were found, and there is a committee substitute that is now being drawn up, or a response, I guess, to the committee substitute proposal, and it should be up here shortly, but in the meantime, I'd like to begin testimony on this. So, Jerry, would you identify yourself for the record? And
I'm Jerry Gardner, the junior representative from District 1. Soon to be senior. testifying today on House Bill 811. I might just say one general thing. I went through a bill like this, similar before, that dealt with preference rights on Forest Service land, and I think, as you may have already discovered and will discover after hearing more testimony, it's sort of a very complex area of law and operation, and when you get into trying to write preference rights, you run into a lot of problems trying to write it exactly towards the intent of establishing preference rights without causing a lot of problems with DNR and going further than you want. So it is, we went a long time with House Bill 32 and about 4 or 5 years ago. So with that, the reason for the bill is based on the community of Thorn Bay, which is in the middle of Prince Wales Island on the east side of Prince Wales Island. Thorn Bay is a logging camp. It's by, I think it's the largest logging camp in Alaska, and they're Louisiana Pacific Ketchikan as part of their 50-year timber contract sale, leased land from the Forest Service at Thorn Bay for their camp, and a lot of homes were, a variety of circumstances have grown up over the years. There's private people who own their own homes. LPK owned homes that rents to people. There's Forest Service homes out there and different statuses of it. But basically, there's people who also live in bunk houses who are temporary residents there. But basically, you have people living there in a community. If you walk out there and look at it, it's just like any other real place. People actually occupying the land there in permanent residences. There's a school there, gymnasium, what have you, utilities, all the normal things the community has. But the way the Forest Service lease works, well, and the other thing is, we've known about the change in status coming here for a long time, and the wishes of local residents to become permanent residents owning their own land. Because none of them now own it since Forest Service is leasing the land to LPK. So the state has selected land in Thorn Bay. that selection is subject to reversion when LPK gives up the land, it goes back to the Forest Service, and there's some conditions on the Forest Service taking it back that LPK has to clean it up or do things to their specification. When it reverts back to Forest Service, then it is available for state selection. And it is LPK's intention to do that here in the near future. This has created an interest on the part of local residents in formally creating a municipality out there. And they are in the process of applying to the Local Boundary Commission and going through all of those organizational things to become a second-class city. And that will be coming sometime later in the middle of this year. And they have been working with Department of Community Regional Affairs and DNR on that. So the situation we'll end up with here soon is that when LPK releases it, this will come back into state ownership. So then what we're faced with is the state would look to its normal land program to dispose of that land out there. And of course what you'd have is that anybody could go in and bid on those lots, and there would be houses on them owned by various parties. Some of them owned by LPK, which they are now in the process of trying to sell to people who are, have been renting them, or other people who live there. And also ones that are have been privately built and owned or bought by other people. So what the bill attempts to do is to give a preference right to those people who are occupying the land out there, have the preference right to buy the lots. We did this with Forest Service leases, as I said, under another section with Forest Service land in both the Tongass and Chugach Forest. And that's the intent of the bill. And I guess as soon as we get the committee up to it, to look at exactly the changes that have been made. But there are two situations that sort of complicate it. I think others might speak to this. One is the fact people who actually own their existing homes right now or have for some years, and those people that are sort of in the process who have been renting from LPK or other status who have been LPK rather than tear down those homes, which the Forest Service could require them to clean up the land that they've leased. Rather than do that, it would make more sense to sell it to existing residents of the community. And so we want to provide that in both those situations, those people who have been working and living there for some years could have this preference right. The other thing that will evidently is already taken care of is the new municipality of Thorne Bay would be able to have a municipal land selection, and they could select land such as the school and other municipal type facilities already on. So they, the needs of the municipality can be taken care of through existing law. I'd be happy to answer any questions on the bill. Any questions for the
I was just asking, I don't know what anybody's doing in this case. I mean, that's the response to the idea. But what is the reason for, or is there a big push to have it so that if it's the land for commercial use, you have to pay a fair market value for residential use, and you can have it. Is that a strong point in your particular reason?
Well, the commercial use would be LPK, and they have a lot of land use for commercial purposes out there. There's also other companies that may not move in there with commercial ventures. It could the municipality could select that land, and it might be a revenue source for the community in terms of leasing it out or something. But we have not had a request from any commercial users to have a preference site. The only request, and that's why the bill was just limited to residential. That was the only request we received.
Bill would allow for commercial use. For permanent improvement. However, the bill would, as I read it here, I don't know what the committee says to you. In section B, if the permanent improvement described in negative section for use other than use listed in C, the purchase price offered to the occupant shall not be less than the appraised fair market value of land. In other words, the commercial use, whether it's a sporting goods store or anything else, you're asking if the fair market price be paid by that commercial user. My question is, why is that not the case for residential use? In other words, what you're saying is saying they will sell the land, the commercial user has to give the land to residential use. And I'm just wondering what the, if that's a strong point or why that difference was decided upon.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's just to some extent keeping with sort of the homestead concept where we have made a distinction between residential uses of land and commercial uses of land. If people were using it for not a business or, well, I guess maybe an extended recreational, but people are actually using it as their primary place of abode. And in essence, that's what we have. We have people who have built homes out here in the land. They couldn't own the land before, and now they could. So I think that, you know, the probably the only rationale for making the distinction.
I would assume that during the time that the assembly company leased the land, that the resident did not pay a portion of that lease for the ability to reside there. Is that a correct assumption?
Yeah, I'm not sure about the exact details, and I'm not sure if maybe somebody else could speak to that. See, some of the houses were owned by LPK, and it's a little bit complicated in that, too, that LPK owned the utilities, water, sewer, and stuff, and so, and the people who worked there worked for the union, so some of these things were, maybe they give them a break on the utilities, but they don't get wages, or, you know, it was all, like, a lot of these things were negotiated housing, and so it's not a normal situation, you know, like a regular community, and I think that's now part of the urge of both LPK and the people who live there to be in a more normal status of that, because those things were negotiated through union contract, many of them. I don't actually know what LPK paid for the lease of the land, or if they did. I think it may have been part of their 50-year contract.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Did you want to say something?
No, just one other thing. I think on the commercial bit, if I remember right, there's only one small commercial establishment on the drive to a customer. So that was probably the rationale behind it is all we're trying to do is help the people that are there and stuck and those that want to come on board later if they want to buy the land.
Probably a lot of that will, if this was to go through and the city was set up as municipalities, then they would have a planning and zoning committee, and then they would probably identify the commercial lands at which time they would be sold. It's pretty difficult at this time to sell the land. You probably wouldn't want to sell the commercial land until the city had a chance to identify where they'd want that commercial land area to be. And the state, I guess, would be the recipient of the money for what they're going to tell you. So, Reggie Johnson and Dennis Coates are here from Florida Day. They'd like to speak to the committee and speak them up and identify yourself for the record.
If you want to do this together, Reggie, I just...
I'd like to come up, Reggie, and then...
my name is Dennis Coates, representing People of Thorn Bay as Incorporations Committee Chairman.
And my name is Reggie Johnson, and I'm the newly elected president of the Community Club, our little form of local government until incorporation time, and at which time we'll
push that over to the city government operations.
I guess basically where this health bill originated was, as Terry mentioned before, is the fact that if Louisiana Pacific has abandoned the lower end of camp, which is looking at the map upside right, this area down in here. And due to cutbacks in their operations, due to economic conditions and everything else, they cut back their production and the camp that they need to service, do their service, can be operated out of this area. Okay, there's approximately 40 homes down in this lower area. And people down there have been working in other logging operations around the island. By abandoning this area, those people, the way the law reads right now, have to move out of camp. Okay, Seeleyville or Kowak, Craig areas don't have the housing to furnish those people with housing units. And as it stands right now, we've only lost about 5 families that have moved south. To keep up our economic projections, we would like to keep as many people in this area as we can. And by adoption of this House Bill 811, we can do that. Some of the question Mr. Fanning had about why the people should only have to pay the survey costs and stuff. Many of these people have lived in that area for 20 years. They have hauled dirt in and buckets and barrels and pickup loads. That complete camp area was rock. And they've developed yards, got gardens growing, and lawns and flowers and the whole bit that any other town has. And for them to have done all this work, to have the state go and sell it to somebody else for appraised cost, you know, I don't think that's very fair. You know, they've already done their time on it.
Normal state laws relating to land disposal were to take effect with the lottery, the home site collection.
Oh, with certain sites, the individual lottery could be purchased.
Right. Correct.
I guess as the present bill reads, we're pretty much happy with it. Unless there's some drastic changes in there that we're not aware of at this time. You want to say something on that, Ben?
To reiterate, the original bill was created to protect the interests of the homeowners that actually own the dwellings that they were in. Since that time, the option has been available for other residents of Thorn Bay to purchase houses. This second group needs to be represented in this bill, and it's taken under consideration in Section B here. The company is at this time offering for sale the houses in the abandoned section. It was they were offered for sale on a preferential basis. The Louisiana Pacific employees living at Thorn Bay were offered first chance to buy the houses. As soon as those bids were awarded, the other residents of Thorn Bay, including Forest Service personnel and school personnel, were offered the opportunity to bid on these houses. And we'll find out the results of those bids probably Thursday when we get back. After those bids are awarded, then the houses will go into an open market condition where anybody from Ketchikan or any place else conceivably could buy the house. The problem that we are running up against in this second interest group here is that of financing. Banks will not touch a loan on those houses because there is no stipulation as to the title of the land. With this bill being passed, the possibility is there that we could get financing from the bank to help us out on the purchase of these homes. Most of the houses in the Morinda camp are ranging anywhere from $8,000 to $21,000 selling price. And for some people, it's going to be pretty tough to cash out on a $20,000 house if they have 60 days to pay for it. Rather than, and if we have the opportunity to go for Alaska Housing Authority loan or some other type of long-term financing, it would allow the residents of Thorn Bay to stay there. And I guess that's about all that I had to say with the inclusion of the second group of people coming into the picture since the bill was originally created.
Something else that I might add is that this bill is not only for the Thorn Bay logging camp as such, but for future areas where state land selections are made in other logging camps. And right now you're looking at probably Whale Pass, Coffin Cove, and Nockety. That's on Prince of Wales Island, and possibly other ones in other areas that we're not aware of. And these people should be allowed to have preferences. They've lived there and worked there.
Personally, I don't have any problem with whatever the concept. I think it's very good, but I guess I'm still somewhat confused, probably because I've seen what, but I'm not familiar with the specific situation. The bill seems to address, if I understand right, specific individuals and specific properties that underlay specific facilities. The conversation has involved community land and incorporated cities and other land. Somebody explain that relationship. Are we talking in this bill only about land that is underneath individual houses, or are we talking about additional land?
This bill will only deal with land underneath houses. As far as the incorporation of Thorn Bay as a second class city goes, the boundaries of the city have included all state selection land in the Thorn Bay area. I think it's approximately 7,000 acres of land. Now, as far as what the city is going to do for city selection of land, that will have to be taken up at a later date, because we're going to be wanting land on the other side of the bay as well as on the developed side of the bay. But this bill will give strictly the homeowners a chance to not be kicked out of camp.
How many permanent residents do you have
in Thorn Bay? Approximately
250. And what other than timber is your economic base? You also have fishing or?
The projected economic base for, are you talking about when we incorporate? Okay. We have projected income from two other major industries in the Thorn Bay area, from fishing and from mining, as a major industry source, as well as the support services that go along with them. If the state ferry system were to put in their proposed mainline ferry terminal in Tolstoy Bay, Thorn Bay could become the nerve center of Prince of Wales Island, with most the shipping and trading going through that area. And then you'd have the building contractors and all the other support services, the grocery stores to go along with it, if we have something to offer these businesses as an industrial park, land bases in which to build their industries up.
Thank you.
So,
are you in the borough?
No, we're not.
North
of. Yeah, we're about 40 miles northwest of Jacksonville. Right.
The language, the difference in the language in the committee substitute, I'm going to say that it seems to be in
and what is now B and what was C relative to elimination of recreation cabin, recreational residence, non-recreational residence, residence of the community nature, and speaks to land being used for non-commercial residential or recreational purposes. I guess that may be just the way lawyers talk, but if somebody explains to me what that is, what is a non-recreational residence? I don't know what that is. I've never heard of a recreational residence.
Okay, a recreational residence, as far as I was able to interpret, would mean a summer cabin type of usage, of which there are none in Thorn Bay at this time, or in any logging camp. A recreational use would be where somebody would, you know, basically live somebody someplace else and use it for recreational purposes.
And that's not a situation that you're encountering in Thorn Bay?
No, we have permanent family dwellings there in Thorn Bay where people will live year-round in order to work and raise their families in the Thorn Bay area. That's the way I interpret the non-recreational residence.
Am I incorrect in
assuming, Mr. Chairman, that we do have some missionary facilities for churches and things in the area that are of a non-recreational status that would be included in this?
In other words, you don't have any recreation cabins.
Right.
One of the things you mentioned there was that the houses were not purchased by residents, they would go on the public auction, and there would be other people, so there could be in the future, or in the near future, people outside the community buying home care for whatever purposes they might do. Some of these homes that LPK is currently selling, somebody outside the community to buy them. There hasn't been a problem in the past because nobody can buy property there.
The company has abandoned the lower part of camp, which means that they have given up all contractual obligations for that particular section of land. The timber sale contract will not be expired until the year 2004 as a whole. So the timber sale contract as a contract, it still has another 22 years to go. But as soon as they abandon that section of camp, then their contractual obligations towards that section of camp will cease to exist.
And if we accept that you came back and had, if the occupant occupied the land for at least 1 year before the termination, I thought you guys had problems with that.
We did, but it was taken care of by Section B here.
Chair, what was the question? Or did you hear the question?
I was just saying that there was some problems with having to occupy the thing for at least a year in advance, and then I guess that is taken care of in B where it says, if the occupant purchased the permanent improvement from the timber sale contract before the termination of the timber sale contract.
Which would basically mean
sometime before the year 2004, somebody who may now not be an occupant goes out and becomes an occupant, purchases the home, and then would have preference rights.
If it's not already sold. And the other
unless you
know, it's selected by the city, right? Once it goes into my ownership, then I can do whatever I wish with it. If I were to move, I could put it up for sale. Same as any other homeowner in the state. The termination of the timber sale contract. I'm not exactly sure how that would be applied to this area, whether it would be from the time of abandonment or the time that the Forest Service accepted the abandonment of the area or the year 2004.
I have a question. When did the state, where you said the state has selected the land?
where the state is going to select the land, does the state have ownership to the land?
They have created a land and we receive automatically when they're abandoned a certain portion,
So the contract is going to still be enforced, but the state's going to own the land.
I'm Mark Widow from the Department of Natural Resources. We generally think it's a good deal.
You have a committee substitute as well?
Yeah, I do, thank you. To answer your question, just the way that timber contract works is they